Welcome to Dialogue. My name is Victor Agreta, and we are here. We've got a great guest panel here. It's the biggest panel, actually, I've ever had. And what we're trying to do is we're looking at how the Knoxville music scene has evolved in the 21st century, primarily. There's a lot of history, obviously, before 2000. We're going to go back to the 90s a little bit, the 80s a little bit as well. There's, of course, a lot more of the 70s, the 60s, the 50s, and even beyond that. But we will get into some of these things from band posters on poles along the Cumberland Strip to pop-up venues and shows around the city. We're going to be talking to some of the people who have stood as witness and maybe agitators in the local music scene. Venues and vistas, artists, and more as we dial into the local music vibe. My guests include Benny Smith. You may hear him frequently if you happen to listen to 90.3 The Rock. You work at WUTK. Thanks for joining. And Joseph Woods of the Good Guy Collective, also a noted local poet and artist. Thank you for joining us.
Indeed.
And Kent Oglesby, Knoxville Music Warehouse, and other parts thereupon.
Did you look at me when you said agitators?
I was thinking of you.
I think you did.
I was thinking of you, yeah. You're also a booker, and you do some DJing, apparently, right, as well. Yeah, we're going to talk about some of those things. And Chyna Brackeen of Attack Monkey Productions.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And Randall Brown, who was with the New Sentinel for a while, and you're also a local musician, and you still cover the arts, and you're here at UT.
Yeah, I cover more engineers than arts these days, but that's cool.
The engineering arts. So welcome all, and thank you for joining us today. So let's go back to a little bit of an earlier age to kind of set the stage for things here. Probably before a lot of us were born. Long ago, Knoxville was a sort of musical crossroads, you know, because we are located between Kentucky, Virginia, North, South Carolina, Georgia. All of these are fairly proximal to us. So this kind of, and we're located kind of just south of the cradle of country music, right? And we're not going to get into an argument about where country music started. That's a whole other topic. But we have an entire historical exhibit downtown called We Come to Make Records, and that is detailing the rise and fall of the music industry here, particularly making records, the early radio stations and whatnot. It's a great, great exhibit if you get a chance to see it. And in particular, it's how we use this geographical advantage to draw artists from the region to come to Knoxville, make records, and get some airplay on this newfangled invention called radio. Knoxville lost the crown of country to Nashville when the FCC designated Clear Channel in Nashville, which meant a lot of the local stations here had to go dark around sunset. And so if you were an artist at the time, that meant going now to Nashville to make sure that you were being heard by a wider audience. So we fast forward now to the 80s, 90s, the 70s, 60s, sure, fast forward to this. And in the intervening years, we saw a lot of venues come and go, serving a lot of different audiences. We've had glam rockers like Charisma in the 1970s, Sweet William in the 1950s. There was a place called The Place. Started back up in the 60s. Knoxville musical heritage is deep and wide. And something I learned, Circle Park used to be quite the scene in the 60s and 70s. They had free outdoor concerts and protests, some of which were kind of both the same thing. And there are, of course, some lasting legacies as well. The Laurel Theater continues to curate niche performances. The Tennessee Theater has expanded its repertoire, including silent films backed by the Miley Wurlitzer, as well as traveling Broadway shows. Music legends like Willie Nelson was here just a few nights ago. The Bijou is a similar treasured local gem. It's survived numerous calamities to find its footing with a bunch of live performances in this beautiful setting, and the Bistro next door, where you can hear a lot of jazz as well live. So, and this is, you know, this also makes me miss Lucille's as well. Mm-hmm. Then there's Cumberland Avenue near UT campus, colloquially known as the Strip, and I think a lot of colleges have a Strip, right? This is, especially from like the 70s up through the 90s, was very much an epicenter of the live music scene here in Knoxville. It's ceded that crown maybe a little bit to downtown now. There's not as many live venues, but we're going to talk about that because in this brief car ride, I've skipped places like Flamingos, Vic and Bill's, Griffin's, Long Branch, Snake Snatch, Mercury Theater, Manhattan's, and of course the legendary Ella Guru's. And we're going to get back to that one in just a little bit. So it would be impossible for us in our limited time to delineate genres and try to attach them to venues. But what I want to try to get a handle on is how Knoxville's music scene has evolved since the late 90s in about 20 years of changes. And that means new stages and new groups. Most notably, a lot of notoriety, thanks to things like Big Ears and Rhythm and Blooms festivals. I moved back to Knoxville in 2000 after attending UT in the early 90s. Downtown was pretty empty at that time. Mm-hmm. So let's start by getting to know some of our panelists. For those of you who don't know who these folks are, let's start with you, Benny. When did you come to Knoxville? What do you do? And who are you?
Well, first I'd like to go ahead and hit the country music thing, because it's something I like to say, and if you make a t-shirt, at least give me a cut of it. Country music was born in Bristol, grew up in Knoxville, sold out in Nashville.
I was going to say that same thing. Yeah. I don't think you started that. Yeah, oh,
I was going to suggest that maybe Knoxville is the bassinet of country music.
Well, it's obviously...
No bias.
Obviously brilliant minds thinking alike here.
All facts.
I came here in 83 to go to school, but my first Knoxville gig, I snuck into a Candy Cream and the Wet Dream show at the library / U Club on the Strip.
Wow.
I was in high school, used a fake ID. I think statute limitations are well past. But yeah, I mean, I came here to school and got involved really because a guy who lived across the hall from me was in a band called Clock on the Wall. And it was a bunch of guys from Memphis mainly. And they played frat gigs, but they also played the China King and a few other places on the Strip, when the Strip really had a lot of live music. And then obviously went on to work at WUTK for several years as an undergrad, and then from 88 to 91 was the program director as a grad student. And then I really got into booking shows because I worked with so many bands that would come and play El Garou's and Planet Earth and Lucille's and Manhattan's and then Ace of Clubs. And so when the Old City, and that was really the catalyst too, the Old City there in the late 80s, you know, with what Chuck Burnley was doing, Frank Snowden, Ashley Capps, a lot of those clubs started shutting down. And so these bands like Southern Culture on the Skids and others started calling me going, man, that market's too good. We got a place somewhere. Can you find a place for us? So by default, I basically became a club and music promoter and started my own company, No Cheese Music, after I left WUTK. Did that for about 7.5 years. Then worked for about 7 years with AC Entertainment, you know, doing it for a living. Mm-hmm. And so been back at WUTK now for 14 years. Obviously, you know, we one of our biggest mantras is we're local music's best friend, and we're very liberal with our local music policy is what we play, and it's unbelievable the change from back then to now, and I love it. Love being in the middle of it.
Very cool. Atticus?
Awesome. Family moved here in 1980. Came here pretty much for jobs. Mom's from Atlanta. Dad's from Opa-locka, Alabama. I don't care how long he's been here. You can still hear that in his voice. I didn't really get into music till like after I guess my first years of college, but it's been in my, you know, system forever. I was freestyling to myself and rhyming on my way to Austin East, walking down the street. Didn't realize how much I got into rhyming until I was asked to be on a song. I was like, okay, I'm pretty good at this. So got into spoken word poetry in the early 2000s. I mean, just sticking to local. Really got, when I went off to art school for college, kind of got real heavy into the Nashville scene. Both scenes embraced me pretty well, mm-hmm. the poetry scene and the hip-hop scene. But like most cities, those two didn't meet. It was like oil and water for some freaking reason. But, you know, I grew from both of those crafts and both of those scenes. Came back to Knoxville, started with Fluent Engineers. I think that would have been like close to the time when Benny started taking over it at the radio station. Yeah, that was the first... I really got the chance to dive into our music scene and really got to the idea that it was hard for us to find venues. So the Pilot Light, yeah. Old City was probably like the only open door. Mm-hmm. The rest of them, we kept getting met with really odd reasons for why we couldn't perform there. So it's been interesting watching the scene kind of grow. I mean, same thing was kind of, not so much with poetry. People kind of like poetry until they hear what kind of poetry we're doing. But we would at least get into the door, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, I didn't think it would offend me. Make me question my life, you know.
Yeah.
But the hip-hop got nothing. It was like, no, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's been interesting watching that grow, and I've been considered one of the voices of this scene, so I'm pretty happy with that.
Very cool. Randall?
What was the question again?
What's your deal?
What's your deal?
How long have you been in Knoxville?
About 50 and a half years. Since I was born, I was born across the ridge at Fort Sanders Hospital, and every time I get like a new career boost, I realize I'm within a mile of the room I was born in. So I work here at UT now, but been in the local music scene in various incarnations of small bands and doing this and that. Started off in music wanting to join KISS when I was about 9 years old.
Oh, man.
And never got that call. But Had a bunch of bands. We've played a lot of these venues you're talking about, a lot of the great hole-in-the-wall spots. When you asked me about stages of over the years and evolving music, I thought about those hole-in-the-walls, holes in the wall, proper plural. And I think evolution-wise, I go straight to thinking of the Pilot Light. Mm-hmm. And as much as it's a small venue and could be considered a hole in the wall, it's the way it's operated and the eclecticism of music they promote there. It's one of those tent poles of the scene at this point.
China, what do you do?
Well, I moved here in 1997. When I moved here, downtown was boarded up. Mm-hmm. The first time I went to the Tennessee Theater, a rat ran over my foot, and something dripped on me from the ceiling. God only knows what. It was a very, very different scene than it is now. My first show in Knoxville was at Flamingo's on the Strip. I went to see a band called Too Much Joy. And very shortly after that, there was a big blow up because the Indigo Girls were supposed to play at Farragut High School, and there was a parent protest because, oh my God, lesbians. And so they ended up doing a show on the Strip, free Flamingos. I skipped work to go and ended up on the evening news. And suddenly my boss was like, oh, you weren't sick. You were at a concert. So it was about that time I figured I'd probably better start working in music. But I actually am a trained opera singer. So my career started on the classical side of things. Huh. I toured for a little while and then decided to work behind the scenes and started out at Knoxville Opera, started the Rossini Festival there. And then from there moved on to AC Entertainment for several years before starting my company, Attack Monkey Productions, and Rhythm and Blooms Festival and artist management. Did some promoting at the Square Room for several years and shows here and there, kind of all over the community.
Very cool. All right, Kent?
I'm learning so much even in the introductions. I didn't know that about the Indigo Girls. That's my, my alma mater. Always make me proud. I'm born here, raised here, lived here my whole life. I always knew that I wanted a career in music, but I was a mediocre musician and a terrible songwriter. So I just decided, like, hey, maybe I should just try out pointing people in the direction of bands that are actually good. And that's when I started Knoxville Music Warehouse. It'll be 6 years this week.
Wow.
And then from then started booking and promoting shows. Found out that I actually enjoy that a lot more than anything else in music. Booked our first show at a liquor store in Powell in 2014. I don't think it's even around anymore. It's Vic's Package Store. Mm-hmm. I've been doing that with my business partner Garrett Thompson for 5 years now.
Excellent. This is Dialogue on 91.9 FM WUOT. I'm Victor Agreta. Today we are talking about Knoxville's music scene, and we'd like to hear from you, especially if you have any remembrances. Maybe you were in a band. We'd love to hear from you at 974-5050, 974-5050. You can also tweet your question to at WUOTFM, or you can ask us on our Facebook page. And Randall, I want to throw it to you right now because you've been around for a little bit. You've been in some bands and whatnot, so you have the experience of trying to get stage time. So what was that like? Let's start off like maybe in the 90s, because that's maybe it's my own bias, right, of having arrived here in 1991. But that was kind of a hop in time for the Strip in particular. So what was that like?
Was it Meanwhile Somewhere in the 90s? Yeah. That was a compilation from the time.
That's right.
I have the perspective of always having been in a band that plays original music. We write our own stuff. And in various waves throughout time, that's been more, it's offered more excess and sometimes less excess because the perennial cover bands, and I don't knock the cover bands, I have great respect for how they work and anybody who wants to put together that kind of repertoire. Because I lean so heavily on, I'll write a song that someone who can put together 3 hours for a to fill a club for 3 hours a night, I'm a little amazed at that. But over time, it's always, let's see, what's a way to put it? Finding where your kind of stuff is going to be accepted and people are like, yeah, come play some minimalist punk rock on our stage.
That's what we're looking for.
And working in minimalist punk rock back in the day also doesn't get you at the party club where they're trying to sell some beverages. But various places, like the holes in the wall I was talking about, people, usually a band would maybe have a practice space and they would say, hey, let's pay the rent with some shows here. I know on Gay Street, maybe right about where Crew Bistro is now, there was a practice space maintained by a band called Jesus Chrysler.
Great band.
What did they call that? Was that the hole in... Was that the...
That's a
hole. Oh, my gosh.
I keep saying hole in the wall, and it may have been the name of the place.
That's a good question.
But they... This was the very early 90s for that space. And they were a punk band that could probably play anywhere because they put it to work and they could
toured a lot
and they could play a party and rev it up. But over time, say as a little rock band trying to peddle your own stuff, you find the like-minded people, and if they've got a storefront that the rent hasn't gone up yet, especially in the time before downtown was hot.
Yeah.
That brings it back around to your point. You could open a setup in the back and charge a dollar.
Well, you know, and that's what's interesting. You mentioned that this was a practice space. Kent, you can probably tell me about it, and Shina as well, and well, all of you. Finding practice space right now is not easy. Is that correct? Yeah.
No,
it's like that's my impression is that
free practice space.
Right.
Free practice space.
Yeah. So something like what you're talking about, especially on the 100 block of Gay Street today, would be unfathomable.
I had a space on the 100 block of Gay Street for 8 years and shared it with one of my clients, the Black Lily. So we had a 3-story space right there. And my office was on the main floor, but we had rehearsal space downstairs.
Right.
And it stayed packed all the time. I mean, they tour 200 dates a year. When they were out of town, I had so many bands in there rehearsing constantly. And then our rent got quadrupled. So those days came to an end.
and that's fairly recent history as well.
It was awesome.
Yeah,
space.
I just moved a year and a half, 2 years ago.
Yeah.
My solution. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, Victor. Okay. My solution for practice space was I bought a house about 15 years ago. And I was like, look at this basement.
Hey,
can you be a musician and own a house though? I'm just
and I can say in the 80s and early 90s, Fort Sanders in particular, one band would live in a house.
Yeah.
Two or three bands would practice in that
house.
Oh, yes. Especially on Highland, the Judy Bats had a house, and then the V-Roys moved into that house.
Well, and that's the same house that was in the news recently. There are some UT students who were in a band who were using their basement as a performance space. And, of course, the fire marshal came and shut them down because they had a front page story in the New Sentinel.
Right.
And it's like, if you're not doing things legally, you might not want to get press attention.
Yeah, stealth can help. I know the Poison Lawn was an underground venue.
Yes.
When I was doing calendars at the Sentinel, I would often hear about, that's a great sounding show. Should I put it in our calendar? And they'd be like, no. We're just going to tell our friends.
Don't tell anybody.
And that'll be good.
Yeah, the Purple Polia was another one that was shut down about a year ago or so. But that's another interesting thing, right, is that there's always been this tradition in every town, I believe, of unlicensed spaces, let's say, for music. Which is all the more interesting, right, as we do have a lot of outdoor spaces as well. And were you involved with Second Bell?
Yeah, I was on the committee.
So talk a little bit about like what that was like putting that together, and that was a huge outdoor space, right? So how did you guys do that?
Rusty would probably know a lot more than I would on the specifics of doing that, but I can talk about Sunset on Central. That's the one.
Yeah,
it's the week after.
Mm-hmm.
This big 1-day festival. We take about 3 or 4 months to book the talent, find the sponsorships. It's hard to keep those kind of things free. That's that's the one thing we try to pride ourselves in doing is having like this big free event for everybody to come out and see. And it just takes a lot of time, a lot of phone calls, and a lot of emails, and then a lot of running around with walkie-talkies on the day of.
Well, now, what's interesting about Sunset on Central, for those who don't know, This is held at a space that a few years ago was a rental.
It's an empty lot.
Yeah, it was an empty lot. Yeah. And then before that, they were renting things like backhoes and, you know, earth movers and stuff like that. It has gas tanks and all this kind of thing on it. So this is, again, this is a space that did not exist as a performance space unless somebody was singing to the radio, you know, in the shower or whatever. So,
yeah, that first year we spent a lot of time just cleaning up the lot. It was just like overrun with weeds and all that stuff. And the central filling station coming in and opening up a business, that helped a ton. Having an already operating business on the space that kept it clean and kept it functioning.
The fun part about that now, because I just did a show at Central Filling Station, and so they have a beer permit now. So if you're promoting a show and you're trying to get a beer permit, the city will not let you have one anymore because of the existing beer permit on their site. So we had to work through a lot of details with that. That finally found a workaround, but
That was all kinds of fun.
And that's one of those things too that I think also people find, you know, that there's that interface between the city and whatnot, because I don't know, does anybody know if the alleyway behind Market Square, do they have that so that musicians will not be ticketed when they temporarily?
That is an ongoing problem. One that I would love to see in Knoxville, musician loading and unloading zones and something we've talked to the government about. Happened yet.
Yeah, maybe in the next 20 years or so.
You know, I remember back when Hot Summer Nights was on World's Fair Park, and this was Benny's time at AC, and then when I was at AC as well, we would do shows at World's Fair Park and ran into issues all the time because the policy was if it's going to rain, then the grass will get messed up, and so we can cancel your show at the last minute. And, you know, when you've booked like a national artist or many national artists for an all-day festival and brought in the staging, it's so expensive to bring production in to World's Fair Park, and then they can at any moment just say, sorry, don't do this.
Oh, my gosh.
I just got a little sick just thinking about that.
Or fine $3,000 after the show.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they did at the Brewers Jam.
Yeah,
we're going to take a call in just 1 second. But Atticus, I want to talk to you. How hard is it to find hip hop stages?
Oh, it's still a bit of a struggle. I mean, I can still count on one hand how many stages that are regularly okay with booking hip hop shows. My friends who are in punk bands, like, they might get ellipses, a little silence. Emails ignored. We get flat out like, nah, man, it's going to be wild. Y'all going to do? You know, I was like, are you listening to what we're saying?
Wow.
Like, we're the positive guys.
Yeah.
But nah, like, no, this has got its own stipulation, man. So it's you know, that and teaching fellow hip hop artists to respect the relationship between the venue and the you know, audience.
I'm in the process of doing fundraising for a venue. We're getting an insurance policy for it. And one of the questions they asked was, will you be doing any hip hop shows?
Yes.
Because that actually, some companies won't cover you if you do.
I was going to say this.
Or they will charge you quite a bit more if you're doing hip hop, and it's ridiculous.
Yeah. Our first shot at running a venue, we just finished up a pop up venue called The Outpost, and my dad is my insurance agent, and I was calling him, talking to him about all the insurance needs. He said, "Are you going to be doing any hip hop?" I was like, "Yeah, for sure." He's like, "Well, that's going to make your rates go up." And I was like, "That sounds like some racist nonsense."
Yeah, I mean, totally.
And he was like,
"It's dead serious. 100% fact."
Well, if you're just tuning in, we are talking about Knoxville's music scene here on Dialogue on 91.9 FM WUOT. We do have a caller on the line, and so we're going to go ahead and take this. This is Matt in Sevierville. You still there?
Hey, guys. How are you?
Hey.
Hey.
So what's your question?
I wanted to ask. I'm a singer-songwriter. I've been living here in Sevierville just for the last couple of years, and I haven't really got a chance to get integrated into the Knoxville scene yet. It's not that it's that far, but you know, the distance it is with work and life and all that, not able to make it down too often. So looking online, a few different musician communities, but not really much, nothing that people really get on and seem to communicate a whole lot with each other on. So I just wanted to know what you and the panel would suggest as far as trying to get myself integrated into the scene. You know, I play acoustic by myself. I've been in bands, and that's where I want to get to. But, you know, finding the right audience that may just be, you know, more open to the stripped down version.
All right, thanks. So what do you think? Well, Kent, you have Knoxville Music Warehouse, of course, is a great resource, or has been for a long time.
Yeah, that's one way to kind of find out what all's going on and what all venues you can potentially reach out to. But I was going to suggest, if you're looking for online communities to kind of reach out to other people involved in the scene and meet some people through that, the Knoxville Music Coalition is a Facebook group. It's closed. We got to let you in, but just sign up for that, and we'll let you in there.
Yeah, I was going to mention Knoxville Music Coalition as well. We are there have been in the past some showcases for local musicians. auditions, and I think those are going to get started back up again in the fall. Also at Rhythm and Blooms and through Knoxville Music Coalition and through now the Maker City Initiative, there are several different groups working on putting together workshops and panel discussions that go all year long for local musicians to try to help them not just jumpstart the business end of things, but also to connect with other musicians. So yeah. Knoxville Music Coalition is a good place to find out about some of those things that are happening.
Yeah,
I would recommend he go to singer-songwriter nights, especially open mic nights.
Absolutely.
I know Union Jacks, their Tuesday night one's on fire right now. And there's several in the area. The thing you got to distinguish is Sevierville's music scene and Knoxville's music scene are 180.
Yeah.
Two different approaches. And, you know, Knoxville has always suffered for a long time of not having a quality listening room. Mm-hmm. And that's what we need for singer-songwriters.
Yeah.
The Laurel is great, but the Laurel is run by Jubilee, and they've, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. They've been doing great for a long time. So, but I would suggest to hit some of these singer-songwriter nights and get your name out there, and in particularly start networking with those artists.
Yeah, and as far as, like if you just want to get your own thing, as far as, like, doing your own show or whatever, it's been real easy to do so at the Birdhouse lately. It's been a lot more traffic with new voices, new bands, and the audience is actually used to it. And of course, the Pot of Light is probably one of the most diverse stages in this city. So, I mean, you know, as far as like it's easy to set up, but if you do want to make a more thorough kind of connection with the scene, yeah, definitely hit up the Coalition and also.
Well, and reach out to local musicians and see if they need an opener.
Just make some
friends and let them know about your music.
That's one of the things I think that's always been approachable. I remember going to shows at Mercury Theater, and you know, you're right there, and you were able to like talk to the artists, you know, after the show and whatever. It's like it seems like a lot of our stages are very amenable to that kind of interaction.
I think our music scene in general, everybody's really supportive of one another. There is a little bit, like when you get to a certain level of success, there can be a little bit of backbiting and, oh, you sold out because you're on tour all the time, or you did this, got your song in a commercial or whatever. But for the most part, at the local level, everybody is really willing to lend a hand to help people out. How dare you do
that?
You did well. What? you're sharing your music?
Turn your card back in.
Yeah.
So... if we go back a little bit in history, we talk about Ella Gurus, right? So this is something that's sort of legend, and this is, at least apocryphally, and maybe some of y'all can agree or confirm this or deny it, but word is that a lot of what Ashley Capps does today was sort of informed by his experiences at Ella Gurus.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Definitely.
Sure.
Yeah. And you certainly see that that curation of music that's a diverse curation of music from Ella Ruggles. Did any of you get to experience that?
Oh, yeah. And not just the curation of music, the business end of things, especially. Mm-hmm. He learned a lot. I saw some incredible shows that I never thought I would see in my life, and saw them there because Ashley brought them here. And you're right, it was all types of genre. And then you get to go hang out with a band at Annie's or Lucille's after the gig, you know, right across the street. And that goes back to that whole, you know, how Knoxville is just so welcoming for the scene. But yeah, it was amazing what he did with that venue. It was amazing, the artist. And if you look at the lineup of who he brought in through the years, you'll shake your head and go, there's no way. There's a great story.
Tom Bug, who is general manager of the Bijou Theater, was at Ella Gurus with Ashley. And he, Garth Brooks played one night, and like nobody came to the show. I mean, it did not sell enough tickets. And so Tom loaned Garth Brooks $20 for gas to get home.
Wow.
And if you listen, I don't remember what song it is, but there's a Garth Brooks song where he actually mentions Ella Gurus as being one of the cornerstones of his career and what kept him going.
Wow.
A lot of history in that club. I mean, it was amazing. Wow. One of Newgrass Revival's last shows. You know, I mean, you could go on and on. Bela Fleck and the Flecktones, you could argue that was one of the venues that really launched them. It was just amazing. And then you could walk around the corner to Planet Earth. And Chuck was doing the same thing with the Spin Doctors. And, you know, 24/7 Spies and bands like that. And so, you know, the old city was really, really on fire back then. We used to close the streets off and do festivals down there, too. And that was awesome. And again, it was a lot of people coming together to make it happen, and which you don't get in every scene. And it's good to see it back to that place now.
Mm-hmm. Well, and fast forwarding to now, we are seeing, you know, outdoor festivals continue. Rhythm and Blooms is a great example. And in fact, you kind of take over the old city there. There's some streets
that are closed.
And, exactly. Right. Yeah. So, you know, it kind of begs the question. It's like, how has the outdoor music scene impacted the indoor music scene?
Oh, it's hugely, hugely. Yeah, so when Rhythm and Bloom started, we actually, we did 2 days in downtown Knoxville, and the third day was at the Knoxville Botanical Garden, which nobody knew anything about at the time that we started doing the festival there. And so we would shuttle people in. And one of the things I remember about the first year, especially of Rhythm and Blooms, but really the first two or three years, was year one, we had some shows at the Bijou, and there were like three people in the audience. I was one of them, and there were two other people. Wow. And we had these amazing artists. I mean, people that now you would definitely know. You know, Sturgill Simpson played in a band that played here. Chris Stapleton played here year two. We've had St. Paul and the Broken Bones and Margo Price and, you know, all kinds of people like that. But we would try to give away tickets on Market Square to get people to come to the venues. And they're like, yeah, no, no, thanks. I mean, I think at that point in Knoxville's musical scene, there was not this willingness to experiment on things that weren't a household name. Mm-hmm. If it wasn't Kenny Chesney, you weren't going to go to the show. And there's still a little bit of that, but I think through things like Rhythm and Blooms, like Big Ears, having more of these, you know, Sunset on Central, an opportunity to just experience music without having to pay for it. And there's kind of like no skin in the game. So you can try it out and it won't hurt if you want to walk away. People have started to realize that just because it's not a household name doesn't mean that it's not really, really fun and worth enjoying. And so that has increased their willingness to go to a club on a Thursday night or a Friday night or even a Tuesday night and go check out music. It's had a huge impact.
1,000% nailed it. Like that's exactly basically all the words I would have chosen.
And this is Dialogue on 91.9 FM, WUOT. I'm Victor Agreta. Today we are talking about Knoxville's music scene and the evolution thereof. You can get in touch with us at 974-5050. You can also tweet any questions to at WUOTFM. That number again, 974-5050. And that's in the 865 VOL area code, sure. Yep. Okay, so coming back to, we were talking about outdoor venues, indoor venues. Here's sort of the million-dollar question for me is, what indoor venues have we seen in the past 19 years or so, right, that have made an impact? I mean, we've got Pilot Light, which was, what, 2002, 2003, I believe. And, of course, that went nonprofit, which was kind of an interesting turn because you don't usually see that. But from my understanding is that Jason Boardman wanted this space to exist beyond him, right? Because a lot of times what happens is somebody starts a place and then they lose the flavor for it and it closes down and it's just gone forever. Mm-hmm. Pilot Light's sort of a unique experience because it is I don't even want to call it a dive bar because that's not it. It's a place for experimentation is what it is. And it's one of those like rare gems that I tell people when they come to Knoxville. It's like, you got to check this thing out because you have no idea what's going to happen, but it's going to be good.
And they actually have excellent sound too, which you don't normally get in a room that looks like that or is that small.
It is. The Pilot Light,
they have a lot of time.
Not maybe the type of listening room that you were talking about, Benny. It's not exactly your Bluebird Cafe, but it is a listening room for the wide range of styles that they promote.
Super wide range.
A lot of that has to do with the respect between the audience and the band too. Absolutely. That's one of the things. I think you walk into the Pilot Light, you know, that's demanded and it's earned. They've done a great job, you know, doing that. And I will also say that another venue that has really helped a lot is outside, and that was Sundown in the City. And it was amazing. And I was with AC when we started that, and there were some goals we wanted to accomplish with that. And I think those were successful, and that was something that kind of outgrew what it was originally set out to do. But the dominoes that fell because of that, I think that was one of the catalysts that led us to where we are today.
Absolutely. I think absolutely.
You know, I just have to throw this in here. There's a lot to say when the venue is in and of itself its own entity. It doesn't matter, you know, what's happening in that space, but it has a reputation. So I have friends out of town who only go to certain venues when they come to Knoxville, period. Like, they won't try anything else. You know, they got to go to Press Pub. You know, and just to harp on the Pilot Light real quick, I've seen so many different types of show there. It's the only venue that has taken me through the full range of emotions. Mm-hmm. I've been completely in awe and then completely disgusted. Like, I can't believe this. What is this? But I keep going back. Like, you know, because I'm guaranteed it'd be something different. You know what I mean? So,
The Bijou, too. Yeah, you know, absolutely. I mean, before the renovation of the Bijou, for many years it was a theater with an in-house theater company. It was used occasionally for music, but it wasn't a regular thing. And then after the renovation, it really became a home for music. Yeah. And I don't know an artist who has played there who doesn't come around, come out of it raving about the acoustics in that room. I've seen so many people just walk off the stage. I remember one of the first shows after the renovation that I saw was Jamie Cullum, and he actually got off the stage, you know, didn't have a mic, came out into the audience, stood on a chair in the middle of the auditorium, sold out show, and just sang a cappella. And it was one of the most magical moments still that I've ever seen in my life.
Wow. Well, and these downtown venues seem to have really been benefited. I mean, there's a little bit of a, like, tail wagging the dog, right? So you had Sundown, you had some other things to like draw business down there, and now we are cup runneth over. I mean, we have, and but the Tennessee and the Bijou in the past 20 years have been renovated and restored quite a bit. And you look at that, that's really paid dividends, because look at the things that they're booking now. Like you said, it's a lot more music at the Bijou now. The Tennessee has widened its palette over the past 20 years or so. And then there's the Mill and Mine. And I find the Mill and Mine an interesting sort of thing, right? Because that's also diverse within its own kind of sphere, right? But, you know, they had George Clinton there. They've had all kinds of touring. Yeah, they've all had
Sun Ra.
All kind of acts there. And all kinds of touring, like, you know, acts that you would hear on 90.3 and, you know, who knows where. But these are major, major acts. Now, is that a pull because of Knoxville, or is that a pull because AC Entertainment?
You know, you got to understand AC Entertainment's pull. I mean, but I think they're kind of our orange peel in a way. I mean, you know.
That was the first thing I
heard. They're that next step up. I mean, I think they're still figuring some things out with that room as well.
The sound.
They'll figure it out.
It's a huge space.
With a lot of hard surfaces.
Yeah. But we needed a space like that. I mean, you know, the ballroom just wasn't getting it done.
When I was at AC, we were losing shows to Asheville. I mean, obviously, Asheville had its own, you know, music scene and atmosphere, and people wanted to be there anyway. But there would be shows that would have come to Knoxville, and they asked, can you take the seats out of the Tennessee Theater? No. But they wanted to play a venue like that, but there wasn't an open floor venue with the capacity that they really needed.
And some to Chattanooga as well. Track 29 for a while, right before the Mill and Mine opened. I remember being so mad that Modest Mouse went to Chattanooga.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I was like, what is going on with
this? But, you know, this kind of makes me wonder, too, if I could throw this question out here, is like, when she mentioned the acoustics, I noticed that when I got into the band The Theorists, we got a lot more recognition and attention because we actually had added guitars to it. You know, it was still hip hop, but something about that guitar.
Interesting.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that was probably the most I've ever seen hip hop be embraced by this city.
Yeah.
But now, at the same time, this is the most, these are the most different groups, identifiable groups of hip hop artists that Knox was ever seen. And even on the EDM scene, it's just like now, you know, I still feel like there's room for the embracing of the more electric bass as opposed to analog.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
But we seem to have an embarrassment of riches. And I mean, you know, Kent, I want to talk to you about that because you book a fairly diverse palette as well. And I'm also fascinated by the fact that you book these pop-up shows and these shows in like sort of non-traditional spaces as well. What's your thought process in terms of that? Like, how do you judge whether you can have music in a space even?
Well,
are they
this
available?
Might ruin, this might ruin a budget? Some of the
the mystique.
It sounds like a lot of praise that is gonna, you're gonna decide it was undeserved after I tell you this. When we started doing those pop-up shows, it was the only thought was we don't have our own place to do this.
Yeah.
And there was no place that if somebody was gonna let us in and let us do a show, we didn't look at it and be like, well, the acoustics are gonna be. No, we were like, we're doing a show here.
Yeah. Right, right.
And if the acoustics are rough, we're just gonna turn it up until people will leave and be like, was it good? I don't know. It was loud.
Right.
But yeah, no, that was basically all born out of the idea of like we don't have our own space. We just need to go to all these other places that might let us do one. And we just kinda like use that as a marketing hook as well to do like the secret show thing, and we did that until we were able to find somebody who would let us do it permanently, and that was Pretentious Beer Company. And then until recently when we were doing the Outpost. But real quick, I want to, you asked what venues are influential in this town, and I just think over the years it's kind of all of the downtown and old city venues that you've heard of have kind of settled into like they all have their own things that are important for bands that are coming up in the scene. Like Prez Pub always has a built-in audience, and some bands are always like, I don't like that people are like talking over the band.
Right.
It's like, that's your opportunity to go win a crowd over, and you know there's going to be people there. So like that has its own importance as well. Scruffy City Hall is the same way. Mm-hmm. Barley's is kind of like that too. Barley's a good hybrid,
mm-hmm.
and you have a lot of people that will come out just to see your show, and then you'll also have those nights where you're trying to like win over a crowd that's watching a football game.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
And it's pretty cool to see what Jig and Reel's been doing too.
Speaking of the importance of keeping things free, like they always try to have free shows on the weekend.
You know,
which is awesome.
You know, I got to shout out Open Court too. Like I love their setup. I can tell they put a lot of thought into that space,
and it's in West Knoxville.
And that's right.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Thank you.
You can feel it out there. The audience out there, they're kind of like, thank you.
It's a totally different audience than you find downtown.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally different.
And right next to Bearden High School too, in an all ages venue that can keep the younger generation excited
about
music.
And they do come out.
That's right. And you know, speaking of that, the question becomes, how do you find out about this stuff? So we've got a caller, Steve from Knoxville, who asks, is there a master list for shows in Knoxville?
Oh, wow. Good luck.
How many people have tried that?
Yeah.
There's been a lot of attempts at that.
Well, you know, Randall, you were in charge of the calendar for the New Sentinel for quite a while.
I did the calendars at the New Sentinel for many years. And
what's the challenge?
The challenge is to get the info. Mm-hmm.
In good time.
In good time, yes. Mm-hmm. And to have, well, in print, it's to have the print space to put all the info there, if you do get all the info.
Yeah.
And trying to be, I definitely tried to be the master list of all the concerts and other things.
That'd
all
be
the
overwhelming.
All the happenings. I actually had a grid called Happenings that was not anything else you could call anything. But the calendars slowly went online, or not so slowly, I should say. Strangely fast, everything was online. And I think entities like Kent's website have taken that reign. Yep. And even just Facebook events. I mean, that's where I find out about a lot of stuff these days.
Another thing, coming up promoting shows in the city, there are promotion wars during certain times of the year.
Yeah,
and when you're talking about maybe smaller events, it's that's something you always have to be aware of. That though the calendar says nothing's happening this weekend,
something
4 days before that,
right?
Yeah.
It'll be all over the world. It'll be like on your radio and your TV and your bathwater. Like it'll be all over the place because they decided we're going to promote this. We're going to have this, right? Mm-hmm. And forget it if it's like free and beer. You know, beer's involved.
Well,
it's
I think part of that is because Knoxville's always been a last-minute town. Mm-hmm. I know just tracking ticket sales trends, locals always buy their tickets in the last like 7 to 10 days. And so, one of the things that we always focused on, and I headed up marketing when I was at AC, but you know, it was kind of hammered into us. It was like, all right, you're gonna push the on sale, but then your last 2 weeks, that's when you spend all your money.
That's when you spend it all.
And
right.
So I think it started in response to habits, but now it's kind of become like the way that people just promote things.
The way they are.
I mean, it's tough. We do a concert calendar 3 times a day on WUTK. And, you know, God bless them. I sure miss Metropulse because they used to sponsor it.
Man.
And all we had to do was go to the calendar and there was the information. Now our students literally spend at least a full day going to websites, you know, Facebook pages, and just piecing it all together because we want to be as inclusive as possible.
Well, I know Steve Wildsmith, who used to do the Daily Times entertainment calendar, he used to always say, you know, he would go to the websites, go to the Facebook pages, call venues, and still not be able to get answers about what was going on that weekend.
Accurate answers. Yeah, if it's not a dedicated monthly, man, forget about it. You're throwing dice, man. Like
actually,
it happens.
It says Steve from Knoxville was asking that question, but it didn't say Steve from Maryville.
It was probably Steve. It's like, how do we find out?
And he asked for master list. I think that implies like every like all music that's planned, but
it's impossible.
We would all like a master list,
right? But for me, and I get a lot of bands ask me about this a lot. We on Knoxville Music Warehouse, we don't include like every single live music happening in town. There's kind of like this weird, very subjective difference between just showing up somewhere and playing music and a show. Mm-hmm. And we try to put all the shows on the calendar, which doesn't mean it usually excludes like standing weekly gigs because everybody knows you're going to be there.
Right.
That kind of thing.
Yeah.
But, well, you know,
and
it's tough.
Phil from Knoxville had a question. Any campus venues? What about UT students? Where do they go?
Man.
Oh, those have gone away. Yeah. I was thinking earlier when we were talking about
Tin Roof. Like, what are they doing?
It's not even open anymore.
Tin Roof's not even there.
They're not even there.
When we were talking about venues earlier and kind of thinking back, like, I moved here in the late 90s, and I was here at the tail end of some of those legendary rooms, and those closed a couple years after I got here, and I feel like There was like a 19-year dry spell, it got worse and worse on campus as it got better downtown.
It is tough on campus.
That's facts. That's actual tough. Facts.
I mean, there you used to have the Strip, and the great part about the Strip is it was kind of the incubatory area for the local scene, because the local bands out of the Fort would come and play their first gigs there, and they would grow up on the Strip, and then they would move on. And that place is not there now as far as just the venues and whatnot, but there's also not an alumni gym now on campus where you can see a really cool rock show, and I saw a lot of really cool rock shows there. Yeah. You know, they've duddied it up, and it's a beautiful listening room with 900 seats now. But it's not a rock hall. And, you know, and I know they're going to be doing Vollapalooza over here in the new student union in the area in the middle there. And there's an auditorium over there now as well. Yeah. So, we'll see. Hopefully that'll progress and they'll bring some more in. But, you know, we had to take Battle of the Bands to Barley's. The UT Battle of the Bands that we started years and years ago because we just couldn't find a venue to work with us on campus. And but we had a successful 2 years already at Barley's.
But you know, like the most I've heard out of UT's, like as far as hip hop goes, since I'm speaking from that, is there's a group called Study Breaks. And like if they weren't a reflection of the lack of venue options on campus, they were literally meeting, I guess, right outside of the controller's office or like around the center of campus. And like they would just have, you know, hip hop ciphers, like full scale, you know, ciphers, and they do a great job advertising on Instagram, or whatever. But like they make up their own thing, so it's obvious they need a space.
It's still a DIY thing. It seems like around
Benny's right after. I think Long Branch was the last holdout, right? Yeah. And I think once they're gone, as far as venues on campus, no. But you mentioned Vollapalooza, which is great. The campus events boards are doing some really cool stuff. They've got the local concert series. That happens. Oh, I can't remember. Is it the amphitheater, right?
No, it's behind Fred Brown.
That's right.
Dorm here.
So. That's right. Yeah. And shout out to a born and raised intern, Emily Hicks. She's done a great job of booking some of those shows and bringing some really cool stuff to campus.
Speaking of cool stuff, China, you've been doing some creative programming with Rhythm and Blooms. Talk a little bit about. I mean, is there stuff that you can do now that maybe you couldn't have done a few years ago?
Yes. So Rhythm and Blooms started as. I mean, at the time we were calling it an Americana festival, and I don't even like the word Americana, so I tried to move that to American roots within a couple of years. But it was very much, you know, we want a festival that is representative of Knoxville's roots in music. Mm-hmm. And so you don't necessarily have to have all Knoxville artists, but they all need to be a style that makes sense in Knoxville, which at that point was like bluegrass and Americana and old time, you know? And I started really kind of pushing the boundaries with that because I was like, look, if we're talking about American roots music, what's roots music in New Orleans is very different from what's roots music in California, is very different from Portland, Oregon, very different from Knoxville, Tennessee. And so if we're going to showcase American roots music, then I'm going to have hip hop and I'm going to have jazz and I'm going to have, you know, just rock and grunge and whatever we can have. So, yeah, we've got a punk band coming this year that it is rumored they take all their clothes off on stage. I just said, don't put anything in the media that you don't want the authorities to know. So there you go. I just said it. we've got hip hop. We've got world music. We've got all kinds of stuff that we never could have done previously.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we've only got about a minute and a half or so left. So I'm curious. On your opinions around the panel here, is downtown Knoxville saturated? Benny, what do you think?
No, I don't. Oversaturated or saturated?
Oversaturated.
I don't think it's oversaturated. No, and I think a lot of that has to do with the quality. If it's quality, you know, and it's good and people want to see it, bring it on, man. Bring it on.
Atticus?
I'm kind of stuck on that one. I'm not quite sure.
It's up in the air.
Randall? Some days I feel like it. Some days I don't.
I would agree with both of those statements. I think it's like just the right level of saturation, but then there's some days it's like, where did all these people come from?
Gotcha. Yeah. China?
Mine's a no, but. No, it's not. But I would really love to see more, and we're starting to see inklings of it, but more happening in South Knoxville and East Knoxville and North Knoxville and, you know, Bearden area, and just kind of expanding what we see as our place to get entertainment.
And Kent?
Thanks for the segue to that plug. Born and Raised is doing their first day festival in East Knoxville on April 20th, the Heart of Town Festival. I'm with you. No, it's not oversaturated. It's getting there, but there's always room for more good music.
Right on. Well, thank you to our guests, China Brackeen, Kent Oglesby, Randall Brown, Atticus, Joseph Woods, and Benny Smith. This has been Dialogue. Our producer is Greg Hill. It's a production of WUOT News. I'm Victor Agretta.